the quill!
Today, we're speaking with three former students and friends of the lab, Rory Beyer, Priscilla Augusto, and Mosley Andrews of Avive, maker of the Avive Connect Automated External Defibrillator. This concept was born of their senior product engineering capstone class in the fall of 2017. Their team received Class 3 pre-market approval from the FDA last year and has been shipping products since. They are the youngest team to receive a Class 3 PMA and were featured in Forbes 30 Under 30 for 2024. Be mindful of your company there. We'll be talking about the Avive innovation and journey right after our Lock the Quill office hours.
Oh, you know what? We actually have a caller.
Oh, let's go to the board.
Welcome to Lock the Quill Homework Help. Who am I speaking with?
My name is William Hector. I'm a junior in mechanical engineering.
Oh, nice, you're with course two.
Yes, I'm straight two, actually. I'm taking my measurement and instrumentation class. I want to do something related to the wind energy industry.
All right.
And I recently built this. It's like a mini turbine. It's not really a turbine.
You have a propeller.
I have a propeller, actually, because I was recently corrected.
Okay.
This is not a turbine. It is a propeller.
It is a propeller. Because, okay.
Yes, apparently the airfoil is not oriented the right way.
It's okay. So why don't we start there? Mm-hmm. If you want to do something in wind energy, why don't you get the propeller going in the right direction?
The professor who actually told me that this was not a turbine is one of the most famous Core 16 professor. And then he told me the first line was like, stop calling this a turbine, it's a propeller. I would love to potentially redesign this so that it is an actual turbine.
So what's your question?
First of all, is kind of advice on like how to potentially design a setup that can allow me to measure the thrust on this.
Bill, what are you feeling? You have a background in wind power.
Maybe hot air, but...
Yeah. Okay, look. You just took your little propeller thing. I call it a whirligig.
Whirly what?
Whirligigs.
Whirligigs?
Yeah.
Okay, I need to Google this.
No, you don't. Don't Google it. Electrical power is probably going to be a better measurement than measuring the thrust.
It might.
So I would punt on the thrust.
So I have a question. That's a very good point. I think,
back up. That was what?
Very good point.
Oh, okay.
I mean, my instructor today told me that I should also measure power. And she said that like the thrusting might actually not work.
You got some soul searching to do, my friend.
Hector, how many blade designs do you plan to test?
This whole blade geometry thing, I've never done any of this. This is already like 30 hours a week.
Oh my gosh,
like
you're 3D printing them.
No, as in like, I need to write that thesis. So I need to explain the theory behind the airfoil.
Oh my God. You're at MIT. You're belly aching over that? You got to do a little write-up on propellers.
So propeller design, you mean turbine design?
Yeah, turbine design. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, whirligig design. It's okay. Actually whirligig is the technical term.
Well, you need to spell that. I don't know how to spell this. Whirligig.
Don't worry about it. Even if you get it close.
Whirligig.
Is that right, Andy?
It's good for an extra half point on the grade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is this?
Whirligig.
Well, that's okay. Nah, thank you. Is this Andy talking?
Yeah.
All right. Nice to meet you, Andy.
Hey, Hector, this is Andy. Could you tell us about your reactions with Bill during 2007?
Bill is like, he's a genius.
Go on.
You know, in street terms, he's like a cheat code, you know?
I'm getting static in my earphones. Can you hear anything, Danny? I can't hear a thing.
I don't know about that.
He's amazing. I have a very good relationship with the Popolardo people.
I think you have enough information to get started, and we will talk to you later.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm out. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hello, Chuck. You're on the air with Lock the Quill. How can we help you?
All right. So I'm trying to put together my thesis committee for my PhD. Mm. And I'm debating between a professor who can help me get my PhD done at a reasonable time versus professor who can give me the most thorough feedback on my thesis project. So unfortunately, those two sometimes does not align. Mm. And if ideally we'll find a professor, I'd align for both. But any tip on how to kind of balance between the two?
Well, do you have a vision for what you want to do post-thesis defense?
Ah, yes. Hmm. I would like to work in industry for
okay, a bit. Yeah. Okay, so you just answered your own question.
All right, you just need to get the PhD fast.
Oh, is it one wolf for speed? Anybody else want to chime in?
Well, so that's Andy. That's Andy's advice, and I'm concurring. Oh.
Should I wake up Bill?
Yeah, I want to hear.
Well, being familiar with Chuck, I think whichever path you take, you're going to be successful for sure.
Wow, that was really nice, Bill.
Academia is nice, but there's like something missing from academia that I wish to get. And I think industry is a good place to get it.
Yeah, you're talking about money.
Yeah, money.
The other thing, Chuck, don't think of this as an either or. If someone is keen to graduate you, that doesn't mean that they're not going to give you sound advice.
That's true, too. I don't know why I think that there are two things I can't get at once, because I could get it at once.
Scott always says it's not the destination, it's the journey.
Aww. I'm having a good time here.
All right. Do you have two particular individuals in mind?
I do.
Do you have any more clarity or thought on who you may reach out to join your committee?
Yeah. I think I'm going to send an email this week.
And did we play a part of that?
You did.
Holy cow.
Uh-oh. Wait. Now we own that. Uh-oh.
Take action. I'm going to do it now, or else I'm going to keep questioning myself, and I'm going to lose the motivation to take action. So I'm going to do it.
Okay, before you do anything that's attributable to anything that we said here, I think you should think long and hard. You know what, Chuck? Do what you think feels right. That's it. You're going to do awesome work. You do awesome work.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. Yeah. I'm glad I joined the call.
All right, Chuck. Well, thanks for calling and good luck with your committee. And please call back and let us know how it goes.
Yeah, of course. I'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye, Chuck.
Bye.
How'd you like to go through life like Chuck? She's so smooth and happy all the time and helpful and engaging and curious. And pretty fantastic. Definitely pretty fantastic.
So why are you guys here today?
Well, aside from just wanting to come say hi, we are here because we are deploying the first 100 of what is going to be over 300 AEDs to every building, every dorm, every fraternity and sorority, many mobile instances as well, all across MIT's campus. So we are swapping out the current devices that are currently here. We are adding over 100 devices, over 150 devices, I think, to the fleet that exists in the campus. And there's going to be one in every single building on campus. So if you're, on campus and you see a defibrillator, that is the device.
That is your device.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
We've shipped many, devices to many great people, but this one, it comes full circle and is just, it's just so exciting and amazing. And we are very proud of this.
You should be. Yeah. You should be. We're excited for you. Before we talk about Avive's story, can you just tell us about Avive, your mission and your products?
The whole focus, the whole mission, the whole premise of Avive is improving survival rates from cardiac arrest. That's where we focus. That's where we build products for. And that's what we do. Today, there's about 400,000 cardiac arrests every year in the United States. There's about a 10% survival rate. Of those 400,000, 360,000 of them will pass away, unfortunately, today. And every minute that you are in a cardiac arrest and you don't get treatment from a defibrillator, which is a life-saving shock to restart the heart into a normal rhythm, your chance of survival goes down 7 to 10%. So if you wait 10 minutes, 12 minutes for an ambulance to show up, your chance of survival is exceedingly low. And so the name of the game here is when there is a cardiac arrest, which can happen anywhere, anytime, to any person, how do you get that life-saving therapy, an AED, to that person as quickly as you can so they have the best chance of survival? And so we make a whole ecosystem of software products and hardware products, the centerpiece of which is the Avive Connect AED. It's an internet-connected device that is super miniaturized compared to what you would see today. They can be anywhere and can get places quicker. And it has a whole arsenal of software products that help us maintain these devices, help them network how we get these devices brought to those patients who are having a cardiac arrest, and how we transfer the incident data after the device is used to a hospital or to the ambulance who might be responding to that patient. And so everything that we do is centered around responding to and improving the survival rates of cardiac arrest.
You alluded to connectivity or the internet, and I think about the AEDs that we see currently that are not connected.
One of the biggest value adds that we have is the internet connectivity. And so the device has Wi-Fi, it has cellular, it has location capabilities, it has Bluetooth, it has all of the things. Mm. And we use that for three big areas. One of those is the automation of maintenance. So today, typically to maintain these devices, make sure they're good to go and ready to use, somebody has to go physically inspect each device that you might own. So on MIT's campus, that ends up being a huge project. If you're a gym chain that has multiple locations, trying to maintain these things becomes very cumbersome. Mm-hmm. And so with us, you have a device that checks in at least daily, and it shows you the location and the status of your product so you can get notified if there's anything that needs your attention. So low battery or a pad that's expired or a self-test that failed, whatever it might be. And it tells you real time instead of having to wait till the next person goes around to inspect the device. A second aspect is how we get these devices to a patient. So we have a program and a functionality we call the nearby emergency function, where if you call 911 in participating communities, the 911 dispatcher can now press a button that makes any of our AEDs that are nearby that cardiac arrest literally light up and show you a map of here's where you are. There's a patient across the street from you, at your neighbor, for example, that's having a cardiac arrest. Can you bring this device to go help save their life? That's how we get the device there, as opposed to you waiting for the ambulance, because typically you're not going to know where the nearest AED is. And the person who does know doesn't know you have a cardiac arrest that's happening one block away from them. Mm-hmm. And the third is the incident data. So as soon as the device is used, and even during its use, we transfer information about the cardiac arrest and about the usage of the device. And so you have the device itself, which is very portable. You have the ability to maintain it in a better way. You have the ability to get it to that patient faster. And you have the ability to transfer incident data. And that's where the internet connectivity really comes into play.
But you can use this device as a standalone device, not necessarily networked to anything. Is that true?
You can, yeah. So to use the product in an emergency, to actually treat somebody in cardiac arrest, you don't need any of that connectivity. So to use the device when somebody's having an actual cardiac arrest, you really just take it, you turn it on, you place two electrode pads that go on the patient's chest and on their side. The device analyzes the heart rhythm of the patient and will only deliver a shock to patients who have a shockable rhythm, who are in a cardiac arrest. If I put it on you right now, you are alive and well. It will say shock not advised, and it literally won't shock you, right?
Maybe it should.
And so, yeah, it'll analyze that heart rhythm, deliver that shock, and then instruct you in 2 minutes of CPR, at which point it will analyze again, shock again if needed, and it will continue that cycle for as long as it's connected to a patient. And none of that's dependent on internet.
This idea, too, of dispatch service hitting a button and then notifying the others, is this a program that people opt into, or how do you build up that connectivity?
Yeah, it is. We have this program that we call the 4-Minute City program. The most classic way that this happens is that a city or community or a nonprofit in a community or a hospital system in a community will purchase a large number of these devices and strategically deploy them around the city. So they might say this city needs 500 devices to be able to get any device to any patient within 4 minutes. And that's where the 4-minute city premise comes from. And so you deploy them to people's homes, you put them in buildings, you put them in restaurants, you put them on sports fields, you put them in police vehicles and delivery vehicles, really to get this density such that whenever there's a cardiac arrest anywhere in that community, you're able to get a device there quickly. It's actually the first instance ever where 911 is alerting a device, not even just for defibrillators, just ever. And so it's a completely novel and new program, which we're very excited about. And we believe is going to be a very important step in trying to improve survival rates on like a mass scale. We're very excited. We're very bullish on the 4-Minute City program. You know,
if you were to ask me where the nearest AED is, I would have no idea.
Exactly.
I think there's one down the hall, but I'm not sure.
Probably right up the stairs by the infinite. We just put it in today.
You put it in.
Pretty soon you'll have one right in the lab.
But
right
once
over
we
there
have one in the
hole.
Lab, if our lab thing starts flashing, I could say, hey, someone in the student center needs help.
Yeah.
That's a big idea.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It is, right?
So we first met Rory, Mosley, and Priscilla as second-year mechanical engineering students in 2007. The robot competition. later for the Papalardo apprenticeship, undergraduate thesis work, and the class that led to Avive, 2009. I've talked about 2009 in previous episodes, and I encourage you to listen to a conversation with Rebecca Thorndike-Breeze, where we talk quite a lot about the course. It is the senior capstone class, the brainchild of Professor Wallace. Student teams seek out multiple product opportunities and vet their concepts for the first half of the semester. Through prototyping, research, and user studies, each team winnows their concepts to a single idea that they work on for the remainder of the semester. Occasionally, a student team will continue the project beyond the class, believing in its market potential. This is what happened in the fall of 2016. Okay, so let's back up in time and talk about the origins. What originally motivated this concept?
Oh, maybe we go back to, I think, Rory's fraternity bedroom late one night. I think we were, so we were in 009 in the first semester. I think we were already like 6 weeks into the course. We were brainstorming. We were kind of riffing on like its emergency response theme at the time in Pink Team. So anyway, late, I think it was like 2 a.m. or something in Rory's room. I was like, well, like, I have this cool one. It's like a cell phone powered AED. And Rory's like, oh, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. but I was just like, I'm tired. I'm going to go to bed. So I put it in the pile and presented it. And then we ended up choosing it in the Pink Team as one of the things to try doing.
I think specifically it was like, you know, we had to come to our 2009 session, you know, that week with 20 new ideas each person, yeah, right?
I remember.
And so, you know, we're on idea 18 and we're trying to get number 19 and 20. And so that's what we're riffing on at this point at 2 a.m. Yeah. And that's what came out of Mosley's mouth and that's what he put in. And I think
I drew a little picture of the cell phone, the cord going to like a person with a shock symbol. And that was my,
yeah. Was
my, you ran with a cell phone thing for a while.
Yeah.
The whole semester.
The whole semester in 2009 was based on the cell phone. Like the device didn't even have a battery inside of it. And the premise was that you were going to draw this power from a phone and use the phone for the interface and things of that nature. That is not what we do today. You know, we've moved on from it post 2009.
Yes, let's make that clear.
Yeah. To be clear, today you do not need a cell phone, right? It has its own battery and it works autonomously. But yeah, that was the original idea.
I mean, it helped to like just challenge the assumptions around what the product should be like generally anyways.
It also inspired a different, you know, typically many existing defibrillators, their batteries are the size of or even bigger in some cases than our entire device.
Yeah.
And so the idea of having a, you know, I'll call it a cell phone-esque battery, right? Something much smaller, much different than this huge one. And how that's architected, you know, came from the cell phone idea, right? And mm-hmm. It helped us miniaturize the product in the end, even though we now have a battery inside of it.
And the three of you were on the team at the time.
We all were.
Yeah.
All right, Priscilla, were you on part of this task force? Were you on Q-Band or Stretch Catch?
Oh my God, I think I was part of Q-Band at some point. I mean, obviously that idea did not, it wasn't mine. I don't think it
did. You're throwing someone else under the bus?
I think that was Stone and John Matthews. Not to call them out.
Yeah, I think it was. Hey, I worked hard on that one. You know, I thought it was a good idea at the time. And
yeah, your heart was in it.
Yeah, always in it. Regardless of what I was doing, I think. Yep.
Stretch Catch was some sort of active suspension system for stretchers and wheelchairs, and Q-Band was a wrist-worn notification device when a piece of gym equipment became available. No more waiting for squats. Luckily for us, these concepts hit the cutting room floor, and the team pressed on with Mosley's cell phone-powered AED. All right, let's just play something here.
Oh God, is that the presentation?
Crowd goes wild.
Every year, roughly 300,000 people die from sudden cardiac arrest. The only immediate treatment is the use of CPR coupled with an automated external defibrillator, or AED, which delivers a high voltage shock to try and return the heart rhythm to normal. With every passing minute waiting for an AED, the victim's chances of survival drops by 10%. Our product can provide immediate support. Revive, a portable, cell phone-powered AED. Revive is unique because it takes the battery, computation, and speaker and uses the phone for that instead of the physical device.
I'm going to pause and just let our listeners know that the three of you are kind of smiling and giggling.
I feel like this sounds like our pitch today.
This is vintage 009. This is, you know, the Revive origin story.
It is.
So Revive can go places that other AEDs can't. Like in the glove box of your car,
like in the
on a family hike, or on the sports field.
I think Rory still uses that line.
We'll now demonstrate Revive in an emergency situation. A softball player has currently gone into sudden cardiac arrest. Anne, are you okay?
That's Rory.
She's not responding.
What should I do, coach?
There's an AED in my backpack. Please get it.
This is character acting at its finest.
Revive is on. Stay calm and follow instructions. Tell a friend to call 911.
Erica, can you please call 911?
Pull loop on dark gray cap. Remove pad.
You still have voice instructions in the current device.
We do?
Expose patients.
Different narrator.
Chest. Remove yep. or cut away.
Yeah, this was Steph. She was in our group. We now have a
no kidding.
Yeah.
Peel lining from.
Pad. Her voice has not stayed, unfortunately.
AEDs will deliver a shock if and only if they detect an irregular heartbeat. While Revive was charging, it had already determined that Anne had ventricular tachycardia, one of the many treatable.
Okay, so it goes on from there, but it's striking to me, you know, other than the major architectural change that you made.
Yeah.
You were right on.
The pitch sounds very similar. Obviously, there's a lot of differences with like the actual product and not the, you know, using
the cell phone.
The
need is spot on.
Yeah.
Let's listen to how this ends.
And we owe a huge thank you to our instructors, mentors, and the rest of the 2009 staff who has worked tirelessly to support us throughout the entire time.
Entirely. Exhausting.
We are Pink Team, and this is Revive.
Yeah.
This is the crowd's going wild.
We closed the night.
All
right.
So you had a very successful 2009 experience. I remember kicking you out of the lab late at night.
Oh, like,
you guys, enough. Go home.
Yeah, we were I think a bit in retrospect a bit shocked that, you know, you guys let us work on such a high voltage thing, you know, and I think some folks were not as happy as others, but what an amazing opportunity.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure you extended your hours to allow us to work longer. So we really appreciate that.
I don't think we left.
We are operating at 15,000 volts and bloodshot eyes. It's time to go home. Okay, so how about after 2009? I'm interested in hearing how you actually launched the company, or at what point did you say as a group, I think we're on to something here?
Yeah, the real origin behind that was that in January over IAP, we got invited by a group that we had done a user study with, or not even a user study, just kind of a user interview, pick their brain about what a defibrillator should be. And it was a group that saw our final presentation.
Oh, wonderful.
And was like, wow, they really came up with something here. And so they invited us to speak at this conference. It's a cardiac arrest focus conference. And I showed up and obviously knew nobody there. I brought the prototype out there and I had the first day of the conference go by. And then during my presentation, it was very well attended. And when I did a demo, this conference room of like 500 plus people just stands up and crowds, like they kind of mob the stage to just get a better look at this device.
Yeah.
And I was just sort of blown away by that. I was like, it's just a prototype. Right. You know,
I did this in the lab, guys. Yeah.
but just the level of enthusiasm that stemmed from that. I mean, I was everybody's best friend after that. I had a lot of people coming up and wanting to learn more. And are you guys continuing with this project? And so it really just opened our eyes to, I think we've got something here. If we've got legislators, medical professionals, parents who have lost children to cardiac arrest, you know, the full gamut, who are really excited about something new, that really showed us that there is something worth pursuing here.
I mean, that's when we realized like, oh, like this is the first innovation these people have seen.
In quite some time.
Years.
Yeah. And so we kind of took that momentum and enthusiasm. We continued working on the project in the spring semester as sort of an independent study in electrical engineering and mechanical engineering.
Was it kind of just made up?
I think we kind of made one up. I
think we made one up.
You made up the class?
It was like sort an independent study.
I mean, it was
thing.
Official. Yeah. It was official.
We got credit for it.
That was the units beyond the GIRs.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, good for
well,
you.
Frankly, that's how we convinced some folks to continue working on it in the spring.
So that's spring semester.
That's spring semester. at the conference, we met an individual who ended up being our third co-founder, actually, who's not from MIT, similar age to us, you know, graduating in 2017. He had one of the largest nonprofits in the country for placing AEDs in locations that can't afford them and doing heart screenings for youth to test for warning signs of cardiac arrest, things of that nature. And so we kind of kept talking about it as a group. Some folks from the original 2009 group were, hey, wish you the best, but no interest. I got a job next year. I have my life going.
Too bad for them.
Some of them, most of them were in that camp, I would say. Mm-hmm. Some were, hey, this is interesting. Maybe considered it, but a little bit too risky, a little too unknown. And so it ended up being myself, Mosley, and this other individual, Samir.
Priscilla was down.
I was down in the future. So I was like, when you need a mechanical engineer, just hit me up. I will come back.
And so, yeah, we decided, you know, to incorporate the company. And after graduation, we took a little time off in the summer and then we got started. And we raised a little money to start some angel fundraising rounds. We actually had a lot of success from folks who were in this industry, you know, mm-hmm. folks who had lost a child or you know, knew somebody who had had a cardiac arrest, emergency medicine folks mm-hmm. or cardiologists or, you know, folks who like really saw cardiac arrest and, you know, knew the problems with it today and the pretty poor survival rates that exist today and you know, were motivated to make a difference in that. And so that was where a lot of our initial angel funding came from.
Mm-hmm. Were any of those people linked to that first conference?
They were, yeah. There were a few folks from that initial conference. There were other folks that those people introduced us to. And sure. you know, sort of the web grows organically from that. I think the first check in the company was somebody at that conference.
This is 2018 or 17 at this point?
It's like fall of 2017 is when we really... You know, we got our first office and, you know, uh-huh. we were going into that office. And,
okay. Yeah. So paint a picture. I mean, how many employees, what's your biggest challenge? Are you still dealing with cell phones and PVC tubes? What's this thing look like?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we three of us, you know, Samir, Mosley and myself in a room that is smaller than your office here.
Which is a big office, though. With a view.
All relative.
Yeah. So really crammed in there. You know, like I think our elbows are kind of touching when we're sitting on the lab space. You know, there's one desk that's a kind of electronics bench. We may have borrowed some oscilloscopes and probes and such from the lab here that we may still have borrowed.
It's on loan.
Yeah, it's on loan. And, you know, we had a 3D printer that was a pretty cheap one.
Mm-hmm. Hey, durable
little guy. They're still there.
It's still going.
Yeah.
It was like $250.
Yeah. It was great.
It was off Amazon and it was, yeah. We got five more of them. You can just pump them out. Yeah. It's great.
I run them all the time, all day, every day.
For prototyping.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, really small space. And really at that time, we were still going with the cell phone idea. Early on, we had, we got an advisor in the company who was the former branch chief at the FDA overseeing the division that we submit to that oversees mm-hmm. defibrillators and, you know, pacing and cardiac EP devices.
And how did you make that connection?
You know, it's really funny because it just comes from those organic, the web, mm-hmm. right? So from some of those initial folks we met at that first conference, we're introduced to some high profile cardiologists and electrophysiologists.
As you're telling a story, that almost seems to me like a moment of we've got an experienced adult in the room.
Yeah.
Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I think, yes. I think one thing that I would credit ourselves for is that from an early stage, you know, we knew that we were getting into a highly regulated space. We know nothing about medical devices. We know something about engineering. And so we got several folks involved in the company from the business side, from financing side, from regulatory, from clinical areas that were in those positions, that had been veterans, had started many companies before or had, you know, been regulatory professionals for a very long time. And we really sought out those advisors mm-hmm. and we really were proactive in trying to get them because we thought that was going to really take us to the next level of being able to make good strategic decisions early on that hopefully would benefit us. And I think it has. And so, yes, that is very much an adult in the room moment, you know. The cell phone powered idea, at least as a first product, it was going to be exceedingly difficult to convince the FDA is a good idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're dealing with any number of phones from different manufacturers, different software versions, how you're going to validate that it works because that's the only power source you're going to be able to use.
Yeah.
Like that is, that's a very tough hurdle. I would say within the first 6 months to a year.
It was like January, we decided, okay, we're going to switch gears here.
Yeah. So fairly early on decided like we've got to retain a lot of the advantages that we came up with this innovative idea, but we've got to find a way to do it in, you know, not depending on a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what set us on that track of sort of the product direction we're on today.
But when you say do it, at that point, you didn't have the vision of the connectivity. It was do it. I need something that's portable and consumers can use. Or what was, the kind,
it was
of
kind of
definition
at the same time, there's the shift from like we wanted to pull all the benefits from when the phone is connected. So we kind of, we had realized there's a lot of benefits to the connectivity early on. But like, oh, the downside was it's only when the phone's there and connected to the unit. So we kind of in one transition took all the connectivity, the battery, the stuff we liked about the phone and pulled it into the product. And I think we also realized more kind of in those first few months how, you know, the whole maintenance side of things, which wasn't really as much of a focus during 009 or MIT days, we realized, gosh, this is a terrible, terrible system and pain point that they have in place now. So that was another thing. Well, great, we can use the connectivity for this and address a lot of those issues. Then the new product was born.
So Rory, Mosley, and Samir got their regulatory and quality system ducks in a row, made the fundamental architectural change to the product that set their course for the next 5 years, and started building out their engineering team. Priscilla, you were not involved in the original group.
No, not at the beginning of developing Avive.
So tell us how you reconnected with this team.
Well, I just got this random call from this, you know, man that I used to know called Mosley one day. And I was like, why is Mosley calling me?
I guess we haven't really kept in touch since, have
we? No, I don't think at all. I'm not the best at keeping in touch.
I just like call you, didn't I?
You just called me out of nowhere. And I was like, oh my God, is it time? And then and then Mosley was like, you know, it's time. And I was like, okay, well, this is it. I'm moving across the country.
Really?
Yeah.
Quit her job.
Quit my job.
We later found out she also, you know, left her boyfriend at the time.
Well, I quit everything.
Wow.
Move across country.
At this point, were you still three people in a crowded room with a borrowed oscilloscope?
Like nine or something.
Five, six.
I think it came after another funding round, mm-hmm. and we were trying to build out the engineering team more, and we said we know just the person.
I am kind of curious, though, this first time I've asked, like, what were your first impressions?
What, when you called
me? When you started, like, Day one in the Avive office. Yeah.
It was crazy. Dude, I was working. There were some days where we were working until like 5 a.m.
Oh, yeah,
we had the usability study.
That was
right
rough.
The first month that I started.
Week, couple all-nighters.
All right. This might be too long of a story, but no? I moved and I had like 3 days to get my whole apartment set up. I moved right next to a Target. I got all my furniture in like 3 days, set it all up. It was raining the whole time. Never rains in California.
Must have felt at home.
And then, yeah, I started working and then I was just like in the office from morning to like, I don't even, when did we leave? Like 10 p.m. or something?
One time I had traffic going home in the morning.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It was a crazy first week and crazy first month. And it kind of reminded me of MIT, like the end of 2009, sort of where we were trying to get everything together for the final presentation. It was like reliving that. Same people, same kind of like hours. It was great. I mean, I loved it. Yeah.
How long did you operate as this 8-person skunk works burning the midnight oil? Has that changed?
Changed a lot. I mean, I think it took about a year to like kind of start. It was a very slow kind of adding one person here, one person there, right? And then
at that time, we were still hiring once we felt the burn and the need for it rather than looking ahead and saying, oh, we should start hiring this person now.
Because we know there's going to be a problem in 3 months.
So we've gotten better about that.
Yeah, I think we were in that office for a year, right? Like in the Van Ness office.
Mm-hmm.
There was like, what, 15 people at the end of that? And then we moved to Potrero. We're there for like another 2 years, right? And at the end of that, we had like, what, 35 or something people? And then now we have like 80.
You also survived the whole pandemic.
We did.
How did that affect your operations?
It was definitely an adjustment. We like to joke at the time, like, it's hard enough to, you know, start a class three medical device company out of college, and now we have a pandemic to deal with. I remember we had animal studies that we had to conduct remotely because we couldn't be in person at the animal study.
The usability study.
And the usability study.
We had to do like a 75-person in-person random users coming in the heart of the Santa Clara, like, worst flare-up. It was...
After every single user?
We had to convince DoorDash delivery drivers, like, hey, you want to make $100? Come on in and do the study, because people, we couldn't find people. Yeah.
The delivery guys doing your usability studies.
I think we got a couple.
Because you're looking for people who have never heard of a defibrillator.
Oh, really?
And who have never used an AED, obviously. And in most cases are also not aware of CPR and don't even know what a cardiac arrest is. Like, that's a screening question we ask, is, do you know what a cardiac arrest is? And do you know what an AED is? And do you know what CPR is? And the answer has to be no to those questions. And so you would get these, it's a kind of hard screening in the sense that you have to have the demographic variety, the age variety, the, you know, lack of knowledge of the problem. And so we, would have people cancel because it was the height of COVID in Santa Clara, which was a particularly locked down area. And so, there was some creative tactics like asking the DoorDash delivery driver.
It worked out. We got creative. Yeah.
So I think that it was definitely an adjustment, and running a lot of those studies, especially as we were gearing up towards our FDA submission, was just that much harder to do. It was definitely challenging.
Yeah, I had to move like a bunch of the mechanical engineering equipment to my 400 square foot apartment. It was so cramped.
You had a heat sealer in there.
I had a heat sealer. I had some 3D printers in there. It was just like 400 square feet, and then 150 of those were machines.
Yeah, we would like review the molded parts out on your little porch.
Yep. Oh yeah, I remember that.
It's scrappy. Can you take me through the whole, I don't want to say the whole PMA thing, because we don't want to go through all of that, but it is, I think it's unusual that a team, so I would say inexperienced, but certainly capable, went through that. That is not an easy process.
It is not. And I think, frankly, if we had known what goes into a PMA when we started, I think we would have thought twice harder about starting at all, because it is an animal, and I think an animal that we have come to love. There's a lot that goes into it. You know, our submission was 12,000 pages of documentation.
I think you're short. I think it was like 30,000 pages.
Something in the tens of thousands. We had several pre-submissions with the FDA before we even submitted to align on how we were going
to
do things.
How are they to work with?
The FDA has actually been very good to work with from our experience. There's a funny story where when we were in 2009, we sent an email to like the main clinical point of contact at the FDA for the defibrillation unit. And it was basically this email of, hey, we got this new device we're thinking about building. Do you have any recommendations for what we should be doing? Yeah. You know, do we have to test it in a certain way? Yeah. Et cetera. And he wrote back a very nice response and, you know, had some links in there and things of that nature. And I remember we walked into our first pre-submission meeting. We flew out to DC. It was sort of like a, hey, here we are. We exist. This is what we're doing. This is our general plan. And he was there and he remembered and he came straight up and he said, I remember you guys sent me an email when you were students at MIT and you basically asked me, how do I build a defibrillator? And, you know, so I like to think that we've had a very good, you know, relationship, and it's kind of built up, you know, from that. And they've been very helpful in the pre-submission process and helping guide us, and they're there to be helpful, which is great.
Yeah.
We have not had the experience of, you know, you're sitting across a table and there's folded arms and, you know, there's some horror stories out there that people have, but that hasn't been ours, which is lucky.
The importance of the relationship, I think, can't be underemphasized. There are people on the other side of the table who are trying to make this thing happen.
And I think that's the thing that so many people maybe overlook or don't appreciate enough, is that like the people that you're working with in a regulatory body, they're having to make a decision about, is this device safe enough to be used in the public? Like, it's a huge decision to have, you know, all this risk that's in these devices, and it has to go to the public and it's going to be used everywhere. And so they have to be sure, and they should be sure. And so I think just kind of empathizing with their position is an important thing that many don't don't choose to do.
From the time you had that first meeting with your email buddy to actually getting the approval, what duration was that?
Yeah, from the initial meeting, it's a little tough because we had a few pre-submissions, but our submission was basically 500 and something days, 550-ish days. Mm-hmm. From the day we submitted to the day we got our formal approval, which sounds very long.
I was going to say, that's a year and a half. That's not long at all.
Exactly, right? It sounds long, a year and a half, you're sitting there waiting. But for a Class 3 PMA, it's actually quite fast. And for a defibrillator in specific, it's very fast. We were actually very pleased, and it was very exciting how quickly we got through that process. I think in part because we, really set out to work with the FDA on it, as opposed to, just doing it independently.
I think you're right. I think the other part of it is being, it ties into like when you're going through the submission review process also, like there's times where there's misunderstanding or miscommunication, like going either way. And if you weren't smart and like conscientious and like a human relations standpoint, it could have gone on for like years in the submission process. But I think being able to like better understand each other, talk it out, communicate, like Rory was saying, is like what really helped us kind of understand each other and then move on.
And we responded quickly to everything. Did. If they had any feedback, right? It was immediately like, okay, we need to respond to them now.
We'd lock Rory in a room for 2 weeks. He wasn't
allowed to leave. You can work on now.
Yeah, we would get some questions back, and it was truly a drop everything. Nothing else matters. We are anything that we need to do to respond to this is what we are doing. As an entire organization, like it doesn't matter who you are. And so,
yeah, they have a clock, right? That freezes as soon as they respond to us. And we're like, we need to get that timer to restart.
There's like this metric where, they have a certain number of review days that their goal would be to review within. But as soon as they ask a question, that clock freezes because now they're waiting for us. And so the longer we take, it's not moving the clock down. And so you got to respond really quickly.
Okay, I'm just pulling up an older email. Here we go. November 4th, 2022. Hi, Professor Wallace, Rob, Danny, Georgia. You may or may not remember me, but my name is Rory Beyer, and I was in the 2016-2017 edition of 2009. We kept going with the project following the course, founded a company, and have been working at it since we graduated in summer of 2017. Well, earlier this week, we received our full FDA approval. The device has changed a bit from what we had in 2009, as can be expected, but it's still an AED, and we believe more than ever that it's going to change the industry. The approval makes us the first new company in this market since 2003 and makes our founding team the youngest to ever receive a PMA from the FDA. It's pretty crazy to think back to 2009 and now be in a position just months away from saving our first lives with this product. I hope that the semester is going well, and I hope this news brightens your days just a little. All the best, Rory Beyer. Well, Rory, we never forgot you and the team. And this news most certainly brightened our day. Reflecting on where you are now and how you started, I'm just wondering, are there any points in time that you view as, oh, this was particularly challenging?
In the initial days, it was the decision to change from the cell phone powered device to the device we have now. That process was a very challenging one, I think. The preparation of the final submission, like this little blemish, like, is that going to get, us tripped up, or is that, not a big deal? The end of the submission process, just wrapping up the last questions and making sure that, we're responding to them quickly, I think was a challenging time. Shipping our first device, like, it better be ironclad, because we are not putting a device into the world that could have any possibility of an issue, like, we just can't do that. We even had this mantra of testing for literal months of just making sure that every single edge case that we could try to identify, we did, and that the product was going to, work the way we wanted it to work in the world. And so
ramping up production.
I mean, even today, right? Like, we are trying to catch up on a significant backlog, right? And that's, you could say it's a good problem to have, and it is, in the sense that, like, it's better than not having any devices to sell, of course.
You still got
to
deliver, though.
Yeah, but you still got to deliver, right? And the number one reason we lose a deal today is because we can't ship it tomorrow. We do have a backlog that we're trying to catch up on. And so ramping manufacturing has tons of its own challenges.
This is a next phase.
It's for, a huge phase for us. For yeah, you, is, yeah. Is, that's, that is like today's big push is getting the manufacturing scaled and dialed and growing it and improving the processes and making efficiency improvements. And
I am so happy for you guys. As we wrap up, I'd like to play for our listeners the audio to your product release video. So it's such an effective and succinct portrayal of the Avive value proposition. I recommend listeners visit the Avive website, avive.life, to see the video and learn more about your company. So here, let's listen.
What is your emergency?
It's my wife. I've been shaking her, but she's not moving. I don't think she's breathing.
Okay, is she awake?
She's not responding. What do I do?
Okay, my partner's dispatching an ambulance to you, and I'm going to work on getting an AED to your location. I'm going to give you some instructions for CPR, okay?
Okay.
Cardiac arrest nearby. Take this AED. Cardiac arrest nearby. Take this AED. Cardiac arrest nearby. Take this AED.
Okay, I've located an AED. I have one nearby. It's on its way to you.
Please hurry.
Okay, looks like the AED is getting close. Can you go to your front door and meet them?
Okay.
Powered on. Stand back. Delivering shock in 3, 2, 1.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
You know, it remains one of the most gratifying things yeah. about working on this, right, is that you are working with a situation that is often the worst situation that a bystander, certainly the person having the cardiac arrest, is going to have in their life. You know, you hear about somebody who has had a save or where their kid had a cardiac arrest or their wife or their spouse or their father or their mother. You know, there's nothing more meaningful to work on than that.
Well, thanks, guys, for coming out. Congratulations on everything you've accomplished. It really is exceptional. You know, everyone here wishes you continued success, right?
Yeah.
I've got to say that it's an extraordinary privilege to be able to say that you were our students.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank Rory, Priscilla, and Mosley of Avive. Congratulations and good luck. Your work will save countless lives. And to all our followers, thank you for listening. If you'd like to participate in our office hours, watch our Instagram for occasional Zoom details. Just join the meeting to speak with our expert team for PSET research or fabrication help or life advice. Next time, we're connecting with a former MIT colleague who is now at the University of Georgia in Athens. Laura McKee recently published a collection of poetry and, well, MIT, mechanical engineering, and poetry. You gotta love it. Have a happy and healthy 2024, everybody.